Welcome to New York Zen Center for Contemplative Care's podcast. This free podcast is made possible through your generosity. Please consider making a donation through our Ways to Give link on zencare.org.
So lovely to see you all here this evening. Thank you. The Buddha said, "I am of the nature to grow old. There is no way to escape growing old. I am of the nature of ill health. There is no way to escape having ill health. I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. All that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. My actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground on which I stand." That could be the end of the talk right there. It was all something to think about. When people ask what I do, and I respond, they usually say something like, "God, that's so depressing." And I will respond, "Actually, it's not. It's often sad, and sometimes it's fun. It's always profound." Here's what I did last week. I've been making home visits with two people who realize that they are of the nature to die. One of them is in his 80s, and the other is 93. Both of these men have had very successful lives and have amassed considerable wealth. Both men came from very humble beginnings. The older, escaping with his parents from the Nazis in Austria when he was 15. He came to America as a young adult, learned to trade on the stock exchange, and at 93, he still trades from his home office, I think once a week. His mind is exceptionally clear, and his memory is extraordinary. We spend time talking about his arrival and growing up here on the Lower East Side. When he arrived, he spoke Yiddish and French. His parents only spoke Yiddish their whole lives. He served time in the army, the American army, as a translator, working alongside the French resistance. And he came back to the United States, got married, raised a family, had 5 kids. He was astute, very, very funny in a kind of dry, droll way. His wife is really adoring of him. She's much younger, but adores him. As I said, they have 5 kids and a brood of grandchildren. And his mind is, as I said, very clear, sharp, and his kidneys are failing. He's on daily dialysis at home. And he's ready to die, as he puts it, any day now. as often is the case, I was asked to initially to visit with him to ascertain were there any kind of existential concerns that he hadn't addressed. And it's so clear that he's done the work. It's so clear that he is of the nature to die and he knows it. Usually, it's the family that needs the support, not the person that's dying. Although, it's not always so, but usually. The person that's dying in some ways has made peace, but it's the family that has all these concerns. So as I said, he's in pretty good shape, considering he's 93 and he's on dialysis every day. And he knows that these days of his life are growing shorter. And when I asked him, now that you know that you're dying, tell me, what gives your life meaning? And she's sitting right there, he said, pointing to his wife. And she responded, you've never told me that. And he said, I got to keep you on your toes. Not much time left. Got to keep you on your toes. It's such a wonderful question when you ask people, what gives your life meaning? It kind of pushes all that religious stuff to the side. It doesn't matter if you're Jewish or Catholic or whatever. You don't have to be concerned with the religiosity of life and death if you don't want to. But what gives your life meaning? Koshin and I and the other chaplains in the room and foundation students have heard all sorts of responses. Football, lotto, the days of our life, Judge Judy. You know? And beneath those responses is a wealth of information. Why that particular TV show, All My Children? Why Judge Judy? What is it about this particular sport or this particular personality that this person who's dying connects to? It's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to explore someone's life. This is a Japanese death poem that I like for him, this 93-year-old. The earth is fragrant with plum petals falling on my way home. The earth is fragrant with plum petals falling on my way home. On his way to his death, the earth is fragrant. White petals are falling, plum petals are falling. Another season over. The other person I'm seeing has Alzheimer's, and he's younger than the first person. He's 81. His memories are sparse. and yet also fascinating. Growing up with communist parents, intellectuals, poets, and writers, his parents were blacklisted in Hollywood and suffered, like so many others in their circle, the ravages of an America at war and the witch hunts for those accused of anti-American activities. And whenever I visit him, as I've been doing now for a number of months, he always recognizes me, but he always asks the same questions. And he tells me the same stories over and over and over again. I've heard most of them about 50 times now. It's like on an endless loop. This is the loop of his stories, his memories, the ones that are important to him. And I always pretend it's the first time I've heard them. Wow. Tell me more. Tell me more about that. And for him, it is the first time he's told that story. Or it's the first time he's asked that question. I mean, talk about being fresh and new in each moment. You know, it's like, yeah, by the way, did you know? Wow, no. He's also fortunate to have the support of a very loving family. And apart from his mind, he's actually very physically healthy for his age. He does have heart problems. He's quite active. He's a big man in his big man of stature in his younger life, and you can see that still. So apart from a sudden heart attack, he could live for quite a long while. He's getting, as I said, he's getting great, has great support, and very healthy. It's just that his mind is not what it was. And he still dabbles in his lifelong passion of collecting art. There's a part of his brain that still recognizes a good piece of art. But his wife laughs and says, yeah, he can see the art, but he ain't writing checks anymore. You know, he would be supporting every starving artist in New York if I let him. And they have a fabulous collection of art. And although he's not dying right now, we've had these conversations about what does he want to happen when he does die. And he has begun to talk about his wishes for his funeral. He's an atheist. Parents were communists. And he said there should be no religious services, no memorials, just throw me in the Hudson River. Who cares? He says things like, I don't give a shit. Throw me in the river. Who cares? And his wife, on the other hand, says, listen, you'll be dead, so we're doing what I want. What's right for me and the family. It's going to be a funeral. There's going to be a memorial service. There's going to be an obituary in the Times. It's all going to be there. You're not disappearing from my life. And Chodo's going to make sure that happens. He's going to be here to help make the arrangements. And he looks at her and he says, "All right, you're the boss." And then he says to me, "Did I ever tell you about?" And I'm like, "No. What?" These are just two of the folks that I've met in the last months and weeks. Two of the many, many people I've served. We could call them patients or clients or whatever, but I prefer to say people that I or we have served. Here's a death poem for him and his personality. This is by Issa. "Born, bathed, dead, bathed again. Senseless mystery. Born, bathed, dead, bathed again. Senseless mystery." When people ask, "What do I do?" and I respond, they usually say something like, "God, that is so depressing." And I respond, "Actually, it's not. It is often sad, and sometimes it's fun. It's always profound."